Thanks for joining us at the Digital Leaders Podcast, where leaders of the digital economy share business advice from their professional experiences. Our guest today is Ethan Richter, who's the co-founder of MarketGen, which provides headhunting and recruiting services to the tech and gaming industries with a focus on Web3. Ethan is a big believer in the potential of Web3. He's also an avid gamer with a love for virtual reality, and he's used these experiences to position his company as a top recruiting agency in the Web3 space. Ethan joins us on the podcast to discuss what it takes to land a job in Web3. Oh, it looks like Ethan is ready. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, my name is Ethan Richter. I'm the co-founder of MarketGen. We're a recruiting company in the tech and gaming space with a focus on Web3.
Ethan, it's amazing to have you on the show, man. We haven't had anyone come in to talk about Web3 or what it takes to get a job in this new environment yet. And I know that's something that a lot of people in the audience are really thinking about doing. People are trying to figure out, how do I get out of Web2, get into Web3? They've heard all the good stuff about what Web3 culture is like, about diversity and access to resources, all that stuff. And people are gravitating towards that new culture that Web3 has. And so it's really great to have you on to be able to speak to that and share some of your advice with the audience. So
thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, of course, man. So before we get too deep into it, let me sort of lay the groundwork for the audience and people who are listening, because some people are really aware of what it means to be in Web3 and others not so much. Could you tell us a little bit about, like, what is the difference between getting a job in Web3 and getting a job in Web2?
So I think as far as the big differences, because there are definitely overlaps, right? Kind of for just the needs in the Web2 space and the Web3 space. The differences really kind of boil down depending on which facet of Web3 that you're looking to get into. One of the things I run into quite a bit is a lot of folks, when you say Web3, right, I'll get a response of something like, oh, you mean Bitcoin, right? And I mean, yes, but also it's a lot greater than that. I call it kind of the square rectangle paradox, where, you know, a square is a rectangle, but a rectangle isn't a square, right? Bitcoin definitely falls under that Web3 umbrella, but Web3 isn't just Bitcoin. So I think that really kind of depends on what facet you're looking to go into. If you're wanting to do more of the NFT stuff, then you're going to be looking at a lot more kind of, you know, design heavy stuff as far as your skill set goes. Or if you're looking to get a role in converting some of the company that's been traditionally Web2 into kind of that Web3 space, that's going to be another skill set entirely as well. So I think that a lot of it really just depends on, you know, what facet of Web3 you're wanting to get into. And kind of using that as your starting point, right, for how you break out of that, you know, Web2 realm into that Web3, whether that's learning a new coding language, just finding different places to network if you've already got some of the skills handy, you know, and again, that really kind of just depends on which piece you're wanting to jump into.
Gotcha. So when I think of a Web3 company, a Web3 startup, immediately what comes to mind is sort of like wacky corporate culture. You know, you get in and everyone is sitting in like beanbag chairs. You know what I mean? Is that what it's like? Is every Web3 company like that?
You know, there's definitely a range. We definitely have folks who, I would not be surprised if that was definitely how they're operating. But we also have kind of the other end of it, which is a lot of folks in the Web3 space really wanting to give that kind of professional feel just because it's so new and a lot of people aren't necessarily giving it the attention or credit that it deserves or needs. So I think it really just depends on, you know, if you're talking to a really small startup, right, they're probably more in that kind of realm. Whereas if you're talking to a big behemoth in the space like Coinbase, right, they're probably doing things a little more traditionally, maybe doing a model that's probably closer to, you know, something like a big banking company might do, right? One of the things I have noticed, though, is that there is kind of a trend or a shift into how some of the interviews and things like that are, you know, being conducted. I recently had a meeting with a client actually in their own metaverse space, which was really kind of a unique opportunity. You uploaded your photo and your info into the you know, program they had there as you signed up, and it basically put you as almost like a little game piece, like you'd have in a board game or something that had a hexagon with your head in it, and you actually had to like move around in the space to be able to talk to people and things like that. And it was like a video chat that you were kind of having. And so I remember, you know, meeting her in that space and her saying, hey, let's, you know, it's a little noisy over here. Let's go over here, and moving to like a separate meeting room and having to actually like follow her with my little, you know, character through their metaverse to actually have this conversation. So I think there is some pretty neat stuff like that that's going on that, you know, we'll see a lot more of. But I think, you know, it really kind of depends on, you know, how big the companies are first and foremost, right? A lot of those scrappier startups are going to be a little more lax. But then two, you know, kind of what they're doing. If they're wanting to do something a bit more serious, like, you know, crypto, like fraud detection or something, right? That's probably going to be run a lot more similarly to, you know, how banking structures are run, as opposed to, like you said, the beanbag chairs.
Gotcha. That's a pretty interesting story with having a meeting in the metaverse. So would you say that that company was sort of using it maybe as a gimmick, or was everyone actually working in that space?
As far as I know, it was just more for us to kind of meet in there. Their kind of bread and butter, if you will, was hosting like events, whether that be concerts or art galleries or things like that. So I'm not sure how much they actually do kind of the working, you know, in there. But to me, it really speaks, you know, strongly to the groundwork that's being laid. You know, there's a lot of folks who ask me, you know, do you see us having interviews in the metaverse, right? And my answer is down the line, totally, yeah. And I can also see us, you know, I call it working physically digitally, which is, you know, if we're having that big, impasse with some of these bigger companies where they say, hey, we want that side-by-side interaction. I need to be able to walk over to you and say, you know, here's what I need, Ethan, and, you know, be able to point at the screen, right? Well, if you could do that because I'm in the same metaverse as you are, right? But I'm still 500 miles away on, you know, the other coast. That's kind of a pretty profound thing. And so I do think we'll see a shift to more of the working environment, but I don't think that's what they had quite set up. I think that's something that we'll see just a little bit further down the road.
Okay, that sounds pretty excited. I'm anxious to see how that all comes together, but thanks for sharing, you know, some of that insight that you have, that insider information there. But let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your company, MarketGen. So I know you started this tech and gaming recruitment company. Can you tell us a little bit about it, and what do you do?
Yeah, so just a little bit of backstory, if you will. MarketGen originally was kind of started with the intention of getting financial literacy out to folks. I had connected with my co-founder, Dallas. We went to middle school together, you know, years and years ago. And we discovered that him and I were, you know, on similar walks of life and, you know, kind of been doing all right. But a lot of the people that were in our same age group or that we had even gone to school with, right, they weren't necessarily in the same places. So originally we had kind of created it and started busting out some video content on little things, right, with how to budget and stuff like that. But with a combination of, A, you know, breaking out in the YouTube space and that sort of stuff is hyper-competitive and can be real tough before you ever see anything back on it, right? But then B, we also kind of thought about it a little more and went, hey, you know, we're getting all these resumes put together for, you know, our buddies and helping them find some jobs. Why don't we do that? You know, it's a lot easier to give somebody that bigger total number to budget, right, than finding 8 ways to split that last dollar to, you know, somehow make that work and stretch that. And so when we had kind of realized that, Dallas had done some, you know, work prior for some of the bigger companies that were in recruiting, doing a lot of gaming recruiting. We decided, okay, awesome. We need to figure out what space we're in. And the reason we went into tech and gaming and then even more refined into the Web3 space was because, you know, being a pandemic-born company, right, it was something that we had wanted to do as far as partnering with, like, future-facing companies and that sort of thing. There were so many people that, you know, were friends of ours or that we had heard stories of that had been working for these big behemoth companies for years and years and years, just to end up, you know, getting laid off or fired when, you know, things kind of got scary. But what we were also hearing was a lot of these scrappier startups, the companies that hadn't been around quite as long or just were more future facing, right? Those guys were the ones in the space that weren't firing people, and they might even be hiring people, right? They didn't skip a beat when things moved to remote work. They were already kind of there, right? And so that's kind of how we aligned with the tech and Web3 space just in general. And we really kind of fell in love with it. It doesn't get much more future facing than kind of the next evolution of the internet, right? And being able to see firsthand through conversations with, you know, the people who were talking with, who own and run these businesses, of, you know, just the ideas and the innovations in the space, there was kind of no going back after we'd really kind of fallen in love with it. And so that's a bit about how we kind of got started. It was definitely a long jump from where we originally were planning to do. But at the end of the day, our goal has always just been to, you know, kind of help folks. And we found a great way to do it and also a great opportunity to kind of further the Web3 space in the process.
Yeah, when we were speaking offline, you mentioned that part of the major goal of this is really just to help people. You started out with your friends. Actually, I thought it was interesting that you started a company with someone you went to school with in middle school. What's it like starting a company with an old friend like that?
You know, it definitely has its challenges. There are lots of people that, you know, say, don't go into business with your friends. And I get why. I've definitely had, you know, times in the past where I've had friends and stuff like that that I've tried to partner with to do businesses, and they haven't ended up, you know, terribly successful. And it can be tough, right, to have some of those harder conversations, you know, with your friends, because you don't want to have the conversation of, hey, you know, love you to death, but I think that's a dumb idea, right? But those are the conversations you have to have when you're being critical and you're being a business owner, right? So I think to that point, if you will, there was a certain amount of tension, you know, in the beginning, but as we kind of continued to work together and stuff like that, we really figured out how to make sure that we were both being heard without sacrificing, you know, any of the substance of what we were saying too. If I had to kind of give people any advice for starting a company with friends, it would definitely be to make sure that those friends have, you know, similarly aligned kind of goals and values to yours, and that, you know, they're also hard workers. It's real easy to think that it'll be a blast, right, when you're just having fun and doing that sort of thing. But when it comes down to actually doing kind of the nitty gritty work, right, not everybody is as great of a worker as they are a friend, right? The reason it worked out well with us is because we had kind of already been doing on our own a lot of business and entrepreneurial stuff and, you know, kind of worked hard independently before we kind of reconnected, which I think was pretty critical to making the partnership work.
Yeah, that is some good advice in terms of really making sure that you pick the right person and that you're able to have those difficult conversations with them. That matters, you know. It doesn't matter what type of relationship you're in. Being able to have those conversations is critical. And I know that you and Alice actually don't sort of like, you're not like traditional minded type of people. Because one of the things I heard about you is that you actually using TikTok to find new recruits, which I think is as cutting edge as it gets right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that story and your experience with TikTok?
Yeah, you bet. It's been funny. Everyone really seems to resonate well with this story, and I love telling it. So, but yeah, no, one of the things that we tried earlier on was, you know, kind of leveraging TikTok to see about getting some candidates. We had someone we had kind of seen who was doing a lot of stuff, kind of similar to the financial lit stuff that we had intended on doing when we first started. And so it made sense, you know, when we reached out and saw 1,000 followers one day, right? 1,500 the next, 3,000 the day after, right? And seeing that snowball and saying, hey, obviously, you know, the stuff you're doing resonates with people, and, you know, it's good content. You seem to be teaching people kind of similarly to what we wanted to do. You know, we'd love to just kind of have the opportunity to help people kind of break into the tech sales, right? And kind of be the other half of what you're doing. And it was just a good natural partnership. We had kind of ended up doing that. And I think it was something nuts like 300 plus resumes we ended up getting just out of, wow, you know, one kind of shout out, if you will, through their, you know, channel. And, you know, I won't sit there and pretend that every single one of those was like an absolute all-star, right? But the point being that a lot of times I think people who are more in that traditional mindset, right, they think of things like TikTok as, oh, well, that's just for fun and games, right? You know, it's a place where people go to watch goofy videos. And they're not entirely wrong, but I think there is something to be said about the person who uses that, you know, entertainment medium for following other things they're passionate about and learning about things like business or, you know, tech or Web3, right? And I think it speaks volumes that people are taking this thing that is kind of almost like TV, right? People watch it for entertainment, but then willingly flipping on the info channel, if you will, and really getting the nitty gritty details on what it is they can do to kind of push along. Those are the people that are going to resonate really strongly when these new spaces are kind of opening up job position wise. So, you know, I think a lot of the good candidates aren't in traditional spots for these Web3 positions. You can go on LinkedIn, you can certainly find those communities. But, you know, the guy who was growing up and modded his video games and stuff like that in order to, you know, kind of get into computer stuff, right? And then maybe by now is kind of learn Solidity or can do some of the things that, you know, are kind of necessary for Web3, right? That guy's much more likely to be on, you know, Discord where he chats with his buddies already than he is to be on, you know, LinkedIn. And I think that's why TikTok ended up being such a strong, you know, presence for us or a strong value for us, was just because we were able to reach that younger audience who definitely has skill sets and, you know, things that are needed in the space, but may not be either in the traditional avenues or even know about, you know, kind of those traditional avenues in order to be seen or be found, right? So if you're going to get creative in the Web3 space, you kind of have to go where the talent is. And I think TikTok being as huge as it is was just a great opportunity for that.
Yeah, I really like the way you're taking this conversation, because like I was saying, we've got people in the audience who are starting to hear about Web3. You know, they've drank the Kool-Aid, and now they're trying to make the switch. But they may not necessarily know, like, what does it take to be able to position themselves as a candidate who's hireable, right? And so I'd love to really have a conversation with you around what you think are some of the pieces of advice you'd share with them that will allow them to be a bit more successful. Are you up for having that conversation?
Yeah, of course. No, I'd absolutely love to give that advice. I think first and foremost, it sounds like, you know, age old, tired advice, but networking is really important. And in an infant industry or, you know, a new space like Web3, it's more important than ever. And the reason I'm starting there is because you can have every last, you know, thing that they want as far as your skills go, right? But if you don't really know who to talk to that might have the startup that will give you a shot, right? Or if you don't really even know where to find those job listings, then you're going to be kind of out of luck as far as, you know, being able to actually put that to any practical use. So I would say number one is networking and just getting involved in the space, you know, joining communities around Web3 things, whether it's NFTs, crypto, whatever you want to have it be, or whether that's reaching out directly to people who have these companies and saying, hey, I'd love to learn more about what you're doing. You know, it's not that every single time you reach out, right, that it's going to result in a conversation or a job offer, but you're definitely going to get those folks who are impressed with the fact that you went out of your way to say, hey, you know, I'm here, I've got the skills, you know, and I want to, you know, continue to learn and work with you. And I think that that resonates across the board. It's more than just the networking piece, right? It shows that you're ambitious and that you took that proactive step. So networking would be my number one piece. My second piece of advice would be to really learn about whatever Web3 space that you're wanting to go into. You know, if you're wanting the augmented reality, virtual reality stuff, that's going to be far different skill sets and far different people than, you know, maybe some of the blockchain stuff or, you know, any of that. And so I think that you need to really dial in what exactly it is you're looking for so that you can be as effective as possible, right? If you're going in kind of half-cocked and you say, hey, you know, I've got a lot of really cool experience. I know how to do Solidity. And they say, cool, but we're doing virtual reality. So, you know, I don't know how much of a need there is for where we're at, right? That's an important conversation to be aware of that you might end up having, right? So I think just dialing that in will make your networking all the more effective too. I think beyond that, just reiterating the reaching out directly, it's a really, really small space. And if you don't know the spots to find them, right, even connecting with one or two people who might know those spots, the Web3 community so far, to me at least, has been very welcoming and open, as, you know, happily told me, hey, I don't have what you need, but go post in this, you know, group or this channel, right? And they might have somebody who does, or, you know, they might be able to get more info. Some of the best business advice even that I've ever got has just come from people who I was reaching out to saying, hey, I'd love to network and get to know more. And if you have a need for my recruiting services, great, right? But if you don't, then I still end up learning. And that has actually culminated in some just incredible advice across the board. So yeah, no, those would kind of be my big three pieces of advice, if you will, as far as getting into it or, you know, breaking into it, if that's what you're interested in doing.
For sure. So on the networking side, I know that networking is difficult for a lot of people. And so you sort of hear the word and you think, you know, social mixers, and you know, you're dressed up in your suit and tie, and you're trying to impress the guy who's doing the hiring or the lady who's doing the hiring. But from what I gather, in Web3, and maybe in tech in general, but in Web3, there's some other opportunities, and I think you were alluding to some of this, some other opportunities to do some networking. So like working on some projects, even if you're just sort of, maybe even if you're just working on a project by yourself, at least you can show that you have some drive and some ambition to do something. But then there are lots of small organizations that you can join. So you can be a part of an NFT project. You can be a part of a DAO, you know, and lend your services. Usually it's for free, but lend your services to helping to push this project forward. And that, I think, speaks volumes to other people in the space, because work is what matters, really, and not necessarily, you know, the talk or the academic side of it. Am I right about that?
No, you're definitely right. I think first and foremost, I want to say a lot of people get spooked, like you said, by, you know, the phrase networking. And I think that, you know, as a society, we should try and redefine kind of what that is, because you're right. You know, old school networking used to very much be the cocktail mixers, suit and tie, you know, kind of piece, and, you know, kind of needing to have that hyper polished, you know, everything to your look or your presentation. And I think, you know, kind of akin to, you know, your joke early on about the beanbags, right? You know, being a space like that. Web3 is, you know, kind of like that as far as a lot of the personalities go. The people that are creating these companies are, you know, just as big into the kind of nerdy stuff as the folks that are, you know, doing all the game modding and things like that. That was kind of how they likely got started or interested too. And so I think people get this idea in their head that, oh, well, if I'm reaching out to a CEO, right, of this startup company, then I need to make sure I'm all, you know, suit and tie on the video chat and everything else. But honestly, that might scare them away more than anything, because these guys are probably going to be wearing a t-shirt saying, hey, how's it going? You know, heard anything cool lately? And just having to, you know, wanting to have a real conversation. I think a lot of times we get hung up on what we want the outcome to be, right? And forgetting a little bit, at the end of the day, we're all just kind of, you know, people on a rock in space. And that's, you know, I think really critical as far as, you know, the Web3 space specifically. And you'll be able to make connections that, like you said, maybe they don't have, you know, a whole lot of paid positions, but they say, hey, you know, I got this group and we're working on an NFT project. And if you could do, you know, a little bit of work there, right? We'd be happy to say that you worked with us and you could throw it in your portfolio. I mean, that's not to say that, you know, you should spend a ton of time working for free or anything like that. But I do think that you are able to get some really unique opportunities to, at the very least, kind of build that portfolio or that, you know, Web3 resume just through making those connections. But again, I think that, you know, what is unique about the Web3 space as far as networking goes is just how casual the networking game is. You know, I used to kind of dress up suit and tie for a lot of the client meetings I was having. And the more we pivoted into the Web3 space, the more I went, hey, what am I doing? This isn't, you know, I'm the only guy doing that. And they're not doing that at all, right? So I think that, yeah, there's definitely a lot of opportunity. And it is scary to put yourself out there. But just know that these people are going to be receptive to that, yeah. Because, you know, they're very similar to you if you're wanting to be in that Web3 space, right? These aren't the bank CEOs who, you know, don't want to talk to you unless you got hard polished numbers or something like that, right? They're the, you know, dorky kid from down the street who just fell in love with tech stuff and now he's doing something pretty neat with it. You know, and I think that stuff is just important to remember too as you're kind of moving through the space.
He said something there that I caught on to. I think he said it twice, actually, in terms of being able to approach the CEOs. So I'm coming from like a business background. And when I think to myself, like if I'm trying to get a job at, you know, a bank or like a consulting company, I don't think I could reach out to the CEO. Like CEO wouldn't even take me seriously. So is this something that you would recommend? Is this something that's even possible to do in like Web3 startups? You can just approach a CEO?
I think so. I may be a little atraditional myself, but I have always been of the mind that, you know, it never hurts to shoot your shot, right? If you can send a LinkedIn message that's a connect and just put a message that says, hey, I know you don't know me, but I wanted to add you to my network so I could learn more about what it is you're doing and, you know, stuff like that. I'd love to chat if you have an opportunity. You'd be amazed just how many people are receptive to that because, you know, like you said, a lot of folks have it in their heads that they can't reach out to these big CEOs. And I'll be the first to say that these giant mega companies, right, you know, big banks and stuff like that, your odds are definitely going to be lower for them responding. But I think they're definitely far from zero. And I think that in the Web3 space, particularly because there's so many startups that are, or even smaller companies that are, you know, 10 people or less, you know, those people are very open and receptive to it because that's how they're able to get things done too, right? It's just reaching out and saying, hey, this is what I want to do. You know, is this something you'd be open to? And you're going to get a lot of no's, right? But you only need a couple yeses to really make headway and make something happen. So I think that if you're using kind of the alternate stuff, maybe LinkedIn or Twitter, things like that, to kind of slide in front of these folks, it can definitely be valuable. And I think that you are right. You know, some of these giant companies, maybe not quite as much so. But I even still, I've done it with them. I recently reached out to someone who was doing kind of the crypto fraud stuff with one of the major credit card companies. And I remember pulling him up and going, yeah, he's not going to respond to me, but couldn't hurt, right? And I sent a message out, didn't get a response. A few weeks later, I sent another one saying, hey, don't know if you saw that, but if you're interested, love to chat. If not, no worries. And then boom, you know, got a response back saying, hey, no, just been on vacation, but I'd love to chat. And realizing, you know, holy crap, right? This is a Fortune 100 company that's willing to have a conversation with me, you know, about this facet of their business. And if I'd let, you know, kind of fear or anxiety get the better of me and not hit send on the message, right, this wouldn't have happened. And I think that just getting your brain to a place where you recognize that the worst thing that can really come of that, right, is they say no thanks. There's not a lot of, you know, real consequences that come from a genuine outreach. I think if you're, you know, just spamming people 24/7 and you don't really have anything to, you know, offer or talk about, and you're just trying to, you know, get in front of important people for the sake of getting in front of important people, it can be different. But I think if you're genuine about what it is you're looking for and about the conversations you want to have, that resonates with people, even in, you know, kind of those major spaces, the big C-suite guys and all that too.
I'm with you. So the other piece of the advice that you gave was around doing your own research. So doing research into these companies to ensure that when you do meet the CEO, you do meet that person in the C-suite, you understand enough about the company so that at least you don't make a fool of yourself, right? Like, you're not talking about Solidity and they're doing VR. How do you get started doing that kind of research? What does it take to really be prepared to meet somebody in a company? How much do you need to know?
So I think, you know, step number one, if we're breaking it down that way, would be to research kind of that sub industry of Web3 as a whole. So just as an example, NFTs, right? If I want to really break into doing stuff with NFTs, then I need to do some research on, you know, what I need in order to work in that space, right? It's going to be more design heavy. It's not going to be the Solidity stuff. And so just knowing kind of the bare bones of what just about any NFT related company, right, is going to need or going to have as far as kind of what they're looking for. From that point, I think a lot of these people really just want to make sure that you took the time to even know what the hell they're doing. You know, I think that it really doesn't have to be a big intensive thing, but if you take, you know, 20, 30 minutes before you're meeting with them just to read back through exactly what it is they do, to the point where you can have a conversation about it and ask some questions, you know, that's really what they're looking for, because they don't expect someone to, you know, just a total stranger, right, to understand every facet of their business, understand, you know, the long-term game and everything else. But you come in and you say, hey, I noticed that, you know, your profile on the company mentioned something about, you know, NFTs being used for, you know, kind of document stuff. You know, what's that about? I'd love to learn a little bit more about how you guys are doing that, right? And then they'll tell you just about everything you need to know. And you only really need the info to, you know, be able to understand what it is they're saying, right? Oh, well, you know, we're using this programming language and, you know, we're going to build this out. And the reason why is because we automate this stuff. And all of a sudden you can genuinely say like, wow, that's really cool. I never thought about using NFTs that way, right? And those are the conversations that naturally evolve into these, you know, better ones where they're saying, hey, you know, this guy's pretty cool. Because I don't think anybody really expects you to know everything, right? Especially with it being such a new space. But they also don't expect you to, or rather don't want you to come in thinking you do and knowing nothing at all and being unwilling to ask questions, right? So just being honest about where it is and maybe some of your wisdom stuff falls short and being able to say, hey, tell me more. I'd love to learn. Because again, these folks are passionate about these projects. It's why they're, you know, pushing in that Web3 space. So they're, you know, happy to talk about what they're doing and why they're doing it for a long time, you know, if you just give them the opportunity to.
Nice. Well, Ethan, you're definitely providing a ton of value to our audience in terms of, you know, helping them to dive into these questions that I'm sure a lot of people have about getting hired in Web3. And so let me ask one more question related to this. So from your perspective as the recruiter, I know you're getting tons of resumes all the time. When you look at these resumes, you're going through and you're looking for, you know, trying to get a sense of whether or not this person is hireable. Is there, can you boil it down to like, what's the main thing that you're looking for when you're going through resumes?
I mean, I think the main thing in my mind is that the resume is geared towards, you know, what the position is. With it being the tricky part about Web3 being so ambiguous right now, right, is there's not a lot of standards or, you know, kind of go-tos for things like titles and stuff like that. So whereas someone might have it listed as like a community manager role and someone else might have it listed as a social media manager role, but then have kind of the job requirements being more or less the same thing, right? What I care about isn't necessarily, you know, the title that you had at your last job. It's more about, you know, if you can give me some stats or some examples or things like that, that I can then take and go back and say, hey, not only does this guy have X, Y, or Z, but also here's some really cool stuff he did that he might be able to do for you too. Because at the end of the day, us recruiters, right, we're building a story for the candidate that we have to then take to our client. And so the more, you know, ammo, if you will, that you give us, the better of a story we can sell, whether that's here's my portfolio or a link to it, right, and some cool work I've done, or, you know, listing just a couple cool projects you've been a part of, or, you know, things like that. Those things resonate a lot stronger because I can turn around, you know, let's just say it's a salesperson, you know, I can say, hey, they did blank, you know, amount of sales over the course of the year and exceeded their quota by, you know, X amount. And that, you know, is going to be really appealing to them. Or if I go to the community manager role and I say, hey, this person went from 0 to 5,000, you know, followers on several different social media channels in like 12 to 18 months, they go, hey, you know, wait a minute. That's pretty cool, right? We're looking to kind of do that ourselves. And so really just kind of making sure that whatever information you think is that you have, right, that you think is the most relevant for that position, throw that right up top. You know, traditionally we've been kind of taught to put, you know, things in chronological order, right? Your most recent job, the one before that, the one before that. And I'm not saying don't do that, but I'm saying if at the very top, right, if before I get to any of that, there's something that says, you know, skills and achievements or something like that, you can tell me, you know, I know this coding language, or, you know, I worked on some really cool projects, I exceeded quota, whatever that is, depending on the job role, I can then take that to use to kind of spin this story. Because at the end of the day, you know, they don't hire skills, they hire people, right? And so there's so much more, you know, dimension than just kind of this piece of paper. You know, they get lots of those in front of them all day long. So if I can give them something to kind of spice it up, right, or make it more exciting, that's really what's going to stick in their mind. And they're going to be thinking about that, as opposed to maybe someone's got, you know, great experience, went to Harvard, right? But that's the only info they really gave me that's super cool. They might kind of fall by the wayside, you know, compared to the guy who was able to get 5,000 social media followers in 12 months, you know, starting from zero and, you know, jumped from his job to do that and has been really successful and did it all because he wants to be a part of Web3. You know, that's a cool narrative to be able to speak on and say, you know, this guy is driven, this guy knows what he's doing because he showed us he can do it. He took the risk of diving on in, right? Why wouldn't he be a great addition? As opposed to the other guy where I can say, well, clearly he's smart, but can't tell you a whole lot more than that, right? I can tell you where he worked, but that doesn't necessarily always tell the full story about people, since, you know, we're a lot more than just kind of the two-dimensional paper that we end up sending to people.
Gotcha. And you mentioned something just now. You mentioned the word risk. And that's exactly what I was thinking in my mind, you know, that there might be, at least in the minds of some of the audience, there might be a risk of switching from what seems to be a stable industry, which is traditional internet, traditional tech jobs, moving into Web3, something that's still, you know, for the most part, unproven.
Sure.
I'd love to know, what are your thoughts or maybe your predictions for where you think the Web3 industry is going in the next 5 years?
So I definitely have a good amount of thoughts on this. I think first and foremost, you know, just touching on the risk piece, I definitely do think there is a fair amount of risk jumping in that if you do have a nice cushy, you know, job with a tech two or a web two rather, a company like Google, you know, that sort of thing, there is going to be some risk involved. You could be jumping to a startup that's got 8 people and only lasts a year, right, before the project goes under because they didn't get funding. You know, those possibilities exist. But to that point, I don't necessarily believe that Web3 is going to just disappear one day. And so I think that the folks who, you know, even if they took some of those riskier shots and they didn't end up paying off right away, right, those are the people where in 5 years, this becomes more of a regular conversation around Web3, they're going to be the ones that say, well, I've already got 5 years of experience. You know, maybe at a couple companies that didn't succeed, right? But now that Google's moving into Web3 and they need all this stuff, right? And they want 5 years experience, people aren't going to have that if they're just out, you know, starting to move into some of those Web3 companies, not they are stable. And so I think it's kind of a, you know, a little bit tricky. You have to make sure that you're, you know, doing your research onto what it is and that you're getting, you know, paid and all things like that. I've definitely heard stories of folks who, you know, are kind of promised, oh, well, once this is big, right, you'll get your stuff then. And you have to be wary of that just because the other side of that is, what if it doesn't, right? And you do have to make sure you're protecting yourself as well. But kind of speaking to that, you know, Web3 space not disappearing, let's kind of rewind a bit, right? Let's say 2010, and I said to you, hey, I just bought a bunch of Bitcoin. You'd probably look at me and say, you plan on buying, you know, drugs online? What the hell are you doing with Bitcoin, right? It would have been a weird conversation. You would have been like, you know, maybe even sketched out. And fast forward to 2018, and everyone's telling, you know, everyone that they can, hey, you got to buy this, jump on board. And a lot of people said, oh, well, this is a bubble, it's going to pop, right? And it did have kind of its big, you know, rise and fall for that year and stuff, where it hit, you know, 20,000 and dropped back to, I think it was like 6 or something. And, you know, it definitely had kind of a, what a lot of people consider a crash, but it also didn't go away. And then now, anytime you hear anything about, you know, economics or things like that, it always includes to some degree crypto markets and what's going on in there. And we evolved to this spot where it's become such a regular part of the conversation, right? That it's not weird anymore to mention Bitcoin when we're talking about world economics. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, that would have been a conversation that, you know, just wouldn't have happened because it would have been kind of this obscure, sketchy thing. And I think we saw another really great example of that with another facet of the Web3 space, which is, you know, NFTs in the last few years, right? NFTs kind of blew up and people were making millions kind of overnight. And a lot of people were making comments of, you know, well, you're just buying, you know, a JPEG, right, for $8 million, not realizing that, you know, there will be utility behind these. There's other things that we can use them for, you know, like I said, you know, whether it's documents or stuff like that. And the longer those have been around, right, the more normalized the conversation has been. It's no longer, you know, complete NFTs are instantly a scam thing, right? It's, well, tell me more about it. And so I think that as the Web3 space continues to exist, you know, we're going to see just a lot more of those things become more regular, where, you know, a lot of job titles will have just kind of similar titles and things like that. A lot of the expected requirements that, you know, they have of candidates, right? Those will be kind of more regular things. There'll be more boot camps and opportunities to learn and educate yourself on it, because the average person, right, will just know a little bit more about it, and it won't be quite as hard to make that leap or bridge that gap. And I think the overarching piece of what I'm saying is, because I think it's going to still be here in 5-10 years, even if it has its ebbs and flows, right? The people who are in it early and are in it when it is a bit riskier, right? Those are the people you're going to see that are, you know, talking on stages about how they became multimillionaires because they, you know, invested in Amazon or something like that early on. And that's not to say you need to, you know, jump in with investments, but being a part of that big space when it's kind of born can be huge and very rewarding. I think if, you know, you're one of the first people that was doing coding stuff with Google, right, there's a fair chance that you can go just about anywhere else and make, you know, a very, very nice six-figure salary. And I've even heard some of the people I've spoke with that did early stages of Google, early stages of Facebook, right? They've blown me off before when I've sent them messages about roles, being like, no, I don't talk to anyone for less than $500,000. You know, if the role doesn't pay that, you know, I don't want to hear it. And things like that, that, you know, we kind of laugh at, but realizing, hey, you know, that's because they were there first. They got the most experience, and, you know, you can't really be here earlier than the inception of it, right? So, you know, I think that's kind of my long-winded way of saying it might be risky, but if you're willing to take that risk, I do think in a long enough timeline, you know, Web3 isn't going anywhere and it could be very worthwhile.
Wow. You made some pretty good points there towards the longevity of Web3, blockchain, crypto. So thank you very much for sharing all of that information. So just before I let you go, before we start wrapping this up, I know that there are people who might want to reach out to you, might want to follow what you're doing and maybe get some more information from you. How can people find you online to keep the conversation going?
Yeah, no, great question. So if you want to find our company page, you can just go to marketgenrecruiting.com. We've got, you know, some jobs posted there for stuff as we kind of continue to get roles. If you're looking to reach out to me personally, I'm definitely on LinkedIn quite a bit, and I'm pretty easy to get a hold of. I, you know, love getting messages from people and just kind of having good conversations. So don't hesitate to look me up on there. I'm also on Twitter, but I definitely am not nearly as well established on Twitter. So if you guys want to help me out by following me on there, that would be useful too.
Nice. Well, Ethan, it's been amazing having you here. Thank you very much again for sharing the advice and the information that you have with us and the audience. I think you've really helped to sort of demystify some of what it takes to get into this space. And even for me, make it just seem a bit more of a comfortable, like the transition of going there. So we definitely appreciate you, appreciate everything you've shared, and want to wish you the best of luck, you and your partner Dallas with MacaGen.
Appreciate that. Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Jay. This was a great conversation, and I really enjoyed being here. So happy to share.